The thing I'm having is I just bought a stupid wireless mouse.
But can I do that with Wi-Fi?
Now my screensaver doesn't work.
And that's the solution I'm looking for.
Yep, that would be it.
Something that they call drive-by download.
Okay, stop there.
Try to boot into something called safe mode. Take my advice and go get this free program that is out of this world.
Eliminate those and see if the problem still persists.
Oh, that's a great idea. Okay, I didn't think about that.
Does your computer bite?
There's nothing that comes in the computer that's of any value.
Has your hard drive gone floppy?
The head whack is the thing that makes you kind of go,
no! It's time to call the Computer Corner.
We're not your daddy's computer radio show.
Is this thing on?
On News Talk 92.3, KTAR.
And welcome once again to the Computer Corner. Data Doctor Ken Colburn here. Lewis from Mac Media to talk about Macs. Mario from Data Doctors, man in the phones. Data Doctor in training, Taylor Colburn. Back from multiple trips and
sickness.
Here to give us the angle from the younger set, yeah?
Yep.
We are here to help you with your computers, your technology, and since Lewis is here, it doesn't matter whether it's Windows or Mac, we've got all kinds of people in here to help you with your questions, problems, issues, you know, what, everything from how do I get this to work to what does this error message mean to I'm thinking about buying something new. What should I buy? Digital cameras, scanners, printers, we don't care. And because Lewis is here, we're going to be fairly conversant multi-platform.
Fun stuff.
That's right.
So your ways of communicating with us are the following. The old rusty wire, the analog telephone method, which is 602-277-5827. Or if you're, you know, you got a Skype account or something, you want to call in through that just to be cool, go ahead. 602-277-5827, which conveniently 5827 spells out KTAR, the mighty, mighty KTAR. Of course, you can go online and visit us online at our website, datadoctors.com, and then put a slash and the word radio behind it, and it'll go right to the radio show page, which will unveil all of today's offerings, all of today's resources, and today's theme, which you don't have to ask a question based on today's theme. We just try to bring something, try to prepare a little bit, bring something that might provide you with some new information that you didn't have before. Today's theme has to do with using your webcam or using webcams for more than just talking to other people on the internet, through Skype, whatever. How about using them to monitor your home, your business, your whatever it is?
Or record a video in a radio studio, a band.
Sure, you could do that. There's any number of things you can do with webcams beyond the, you know, just, hey, how are you? Here am I, you know, here I am, here you are, live video kind of interaction, which I think a lot of people, you know, they think of webcam, they think, yeah, you're going to talk to some other guy somewhere on the other side of the internet, and yeah, I'm not interested.
You got to use it to catch that laptop thief.
The laptop thief? Is that mic on? Can you try that again?
Seems to be.
There it is. More gooder.
Better than bad.
Well, anyway, we're going to talk about all the different ways you can use these webcams, including wireless webcams, which means you don't have to physically plug it into your computer. In fact, there's a whole host of webcams out there that actually have their own web server built in, which means you don't need a PC. You just plug this thing into any internet connection, and it becomes available to whomever knows how to get to it anywhere on the internet. So,
again, how do you see them?
Well, no, it's not a back-and-forth thing. So if I go on vacation, I want to see what's going on at the house. I have my wireless webcam mounted in the house wherever I want it. It's transmitting the video signal through the wireless network to the router and then on out to the internet. And as long as I know what address to type in my browser, I just go to any web browser. Cough, cough. You and me both, huh?
Yeah, really.
We're still getting over this.
Let me stay on that side.
Yeah. Pardon the coughing and hacking. I know lots of you out there going through the tail end of these things. But anyway, you can easily access this camera right from any web browser anywhere. So you don't have to have your own laptop. You can just go to any internet-connected terminal anywhere in the world, pop in and go, ha, there's my house.
Technically, you could do it from some airplanes, too.
Depending upon how far that goes.
Now, that's true.
It is a streaming video feed in most cases, which means if you have a really slow connection, like dial-up, viewing this video could be
a pain in the butt.
It just won't be very smooth. So you get a sense of what's going on, but it doesn't have to be that. You can set these things up to detect motion, and as soon as they detect motion, send you an alert with a screenshot of what was in the frame, right? So it's almost like a security system. Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of the big security companies are providing similar, probably much more sophisticated services than this, but of course they're going to charge you for the equipment, they're going to charge you for the monthly monitoring and all that stuff. So if you're interested in doing this kind of thing, I mean, once you buy the camera and if you already have a high-speed internet connection, you're pretty well ready to go. So we want to talk about all those things and lots of resources, links to all kinds of different webcams that are specifically designed to do this. The regular webcam, you'd have to have it plugged into a computer of some sort to be able to do this. We're talking about webcams that are known as IP cameras, internet cameras. They're actually designed to connect directly to an internet connection, bypass the need for a PC or a Mac, to be able to transmit this video out to the world. Kind of cool. Indoor, outdoor, there's all kinds of stuff. So we'll go through that as the show goes on. And I know people out there, there are those of you that not only know about this, you live this, you've done this. We want to hear from you. Share your experience, share your tips, either through the phone line, which is completely booked, which always happens, so 602-277-5827 when you hear somebody hang up, or jump online at the radio show page, datadoctors.com/radio, and on the right-hand side, about halfway down, there's a feedback section. Click on Ask a Question or General Comments, whichever, if you want to provide your two cents on how you're using a webcam to monitor your home. Of course, I think the first kind of generation of this that everybody heard about in the general public was what they refer to as nanny cams. I want to see what my babysitter's doing when I'm out. Right? Record what's going on. And we see this from time to time in the news.
You put one of those pin cameras in the teddy bear.
Right, there's that. Oh, yeah. There's a website I found that had, I think, 64 different devices. Alarm clocks, wall clocks, picture frames, everything that had a little pinpoint camera hidden in them. So, you know, you can get really...
Secret agent E?
Ish. E? Ishy.
Billick, big brother.
Big, yeah. I mean, you could really go a little nuts here. And there are software programs out there that are designed to allow you to manage and monitor, you know, off of a PC, 32 different cameras. I mean, so you can really get nutso here. So we're going to talk about the basics, and then as you progress, you can start to see, hey, you know, I could add this, I could do those things. But today we want to make sure you're aware of how simple it is, how inexpensive it is, and how easy it would be for you to start playing around and maybe test this thing. So, again, datadoctors.com/radio. Now, the Mac world, full of webcams. Most Mac notebooks, most laptops have cameras built in, right?
Yeah, any of the new systems would have the camera built into the unit. The only thing that doesn't is a tower in the what they call the Mac Mini.
Right, so they're the little tiny unit, and then the really big units.
Correct.
But everything is portable pretty much for this point on has a camera.
That seems to be the trend.
And a lot of Windows-based laptops, same kind of thing. It's not a given that you're going to have one. So again, if you're looking at a laptop and you're thinking it'd be kind of cool to have a webcam, it's fantastic if you're actually using Skype or something like that, because you can just pop right in there and go. That's how I do my CNN segments every Saturday morning.
Well, so it's nice when it's integrated because it works a little more seamless.
Yeah, and it's easier. Yeah. You don't have the extra wires and all the extra hassle. Speaking of extra hassle and wires, we're going to check with Carla Cruz to see if there are any wires on the road.
No.
And if there's any hassle out there. Hey, I live out there by the newly opened section there of the 202, and I'm loving it. We're talking about the wonders of the webcam and how they can provide you a very inexpensive way to monitor your place of business, your home, your vacation home, whatever it is that you've got out there.
Significant other.
Significant, well, no, we're not going to go there. But there are a multitude of camera options out there that will allow you to accomplish virtually anything you want when it comes to monitoring. Whether you want to monitor your babysitter, you want to monitor the backyard, the front yard, you can go indoors, you can go outdoors, you can go wireless so that you don't have to physically run a wire all the way from the camera to anything. Now, a little caveat, and I talk about this in my column, wireless webcams are great, but they're really not totally wireless, because in order to work, they have to have electrical power. So you have to find a location that is near an electrical outlet, which in most cases is not too tough, but it is before people rush out there and go, I just put a camera anywhere I want. Yeah, there is that caveat. You got to have it near power.
What about power over Ethernet?
Power over Ethernet. POE. Little acronym. Actually, it's not an acronym. That's kind of an acronym. Abbreviation. That's where a camera, and there are some links. I've got a link to one from D-Link. But if you can get an Ethernet cable from your computer to the camera, then you don't need the electrical power. But in either case, you got to have that. That one's a little more complicated unless you happen to have your home or your business wired to the point where you've got these network cables everywhere.
Oh, I'm better off tinkering with Ethernet than I am with real power.
Yeah, it depends. I mean, you just plug it in the wall, but we'll see what happens. So anyway, join us online, datadoctors.com/radio. You see all the links, including direct links to various types of webcams that have various features that we're going to talk about over the next hour and a half or so. But for now, let's talk to the usual guy that's first in line, the man, the myth, the legend. It's Louis.
Yes. Well, this is about my new computer, and I'm sure I'm not the only one. One of the first things I did is I created recovery disks.
Now, that makes you unique because most people are told to do that when they first turn on their computer, and they go, yeah, I'll do that later. And they bypass that. So
bad shape if they don't.
Yeah, exactly. So this is lesson number one. When you buy a new computer and it says, hey, right now, go grab some blank CDs. Let's make some backup disks. Don't bypass. Don't cancel. Don't say, I'll come back to this later.
Yeah, actually, I made CDs. I'm also going to make DVDs. So I'll have both backup modes in case one.
Absolutely.
The other one will work.
Absolutely. So what's the question?
Well, there are two flavors of these things, the recovery disks. About probably 8 CDs, and then 2 CDs that were the application and drivers.
Yes.
I'm wondering, what's the difference, and do either of these need to be redone occasionally as your computer, as you add programs and things to your computer?
Well, it varies from manufacturer to manufacturer, but as far as the recovery CD portion, usually that's a requirement because they didn't ship the disks for the operating system with the computer, and they want you to make the proper disks. There's various companies out there where you'll get the computer and you'll see these disks, but you don't see the actual like Windows operating system disk because that's you have to make it. So that's just to be able to get you back to square one. The second set of disks is after you get the operating system reinstalled, you have to then install the applications. Whatever happened to come with it. And so that application CD is only what came with the computer. The stuff that you add later on, I'm not aware of any company that includes that in the creation of those application disks because it's kind of a generic format. So it's the specific drivers and applications that came with the computer in order to get it back to basically the factory setting. So they're good to have. You shouldn't have to make it more than that first time when you first got it.
unless you want 2 copies, so you have one you can send on
right.
site to.
Right, but they're not going to be any different. Now, if you're having to resort to these disks, that means you lost everything. That means you did not have a good backup plan, which I know, Louis, you're going to have a good backup plan.
I'm certainly going to have a backup.
And this, Louis, right? External hard drive, something that's backing up your critical data. Because that's the one thing, those recovery CDs and those application and driver CDs, none of that has anything to do with your data. So you have to have that as well, or this is all, you're starting over, it's like you never had anything.
Now, on the Windows platform, which backup utility would you use to do a restore from your backup?
Well, it's really, that's I think, what the one thing that most people overlook when they're looking at a backup system, is they're just looking at the backup side. They never even think about or look into the restore side.
Sure.
So before you make a decision on your backup system, look at what it takes to get it restored and look at if you're doing just a data backup, then you're going to have to go through what Louis just described, which is reinstalling all those recovery CDs, reinstalling all the application CDs, reinstalling all the driver CDs, reinstalling whatever applications you bought after the computer, then restore your data versus doing a image backup, which is what we talked about last week. An external hard drive these days, back up the whole system the way it is right now with all your settings, all your printer settings, your favorites, your networks, all of that. That's the best way to go for most of you out there listening, residential-wise. Business customers, you know that there's a completely different set of rules for you, but you should be smart enough, and if not, you should hire somebody smart enough to help you with your business. All right, Louis, thank you, sir. Appreciate you calling in, and it's a good question. It's something that, again, if you buy one of these big name brand computers, chances are it's not going to come with all the disks you need in case you need to reinstall everything. That being the case, you better get it together here and get those disks made. It's the Computer Corner, Ken and Lewis and
Tyler Taylor,
back after this. I got so carried away helping people on the phone. It's like, we're back on. Hello. It is the Computer Corner. The data doctors are in the house, as we are every Saturday afternoon, to try to give you a little nudge, give you a little assistance with your technology. And we really don't care what it is. In fact, we got Lewis from Mac Media here to help us on the Mac side. Obviously, we are experts in the Windows arena. And you know, if you want to call in and talk about Linux and some of the other, you know, third-party, third world operating systems. They're really not there. they're actually very high-end technical, probably too technical for 99% of the people listening to the show. But
you're outsourcing that?
What's that? Yeah.
The OS?
Yeah, the Linux. We're going to the third world. So anyway, we're talking today about webcams and how they can be used for much, much more than a way to communicate with others on the internet. And there's everything from these surveillance kits that you can actually start watching things around your house to nanny cams and those kinds of things. And there's a plethora of interaction or interfaces for the cameras to either your computer to a DVR, right? So if you want to do actual recording, so let's say you want to have an on-premise recording system, you can actually record it to a hard drive on a computer. You can record it to a DVR if it plugs in through that type of video. I mean, there's just no shortage of options that you have out there. So general webcams that are known as IP webcams or IP cameras. So they're not your regular webcams because they have built into them what's called a web server. They're actually able to serve web pages on the internet without a computer. How cool is that?
It's pretty awesome.
Well, that drives the price up a little bit, too. It's $100 to $120 for your basic units and $300 to $500 for the really elaborate units that have, like, full pan, tilt, and zoom. You'll see a PTZ designation on some of these webcams. That stands for pan, tilt, zoom. So that means while you're accessing it across the internet in the web browser and you want to zoom or pan or tilt the thing, there'll be little arrows on the interface that you use to access the camera that actually allow you to move the camera and have it pan over or zoom in or tilt. And the more expensive the camera is, usually the better the zoom is. I've seen some in there with a 10x, 10 times optical zoom, not digital, but an actual optical zoom, like a really high-end digital camera has.
Ridiculous.
So you can, yeah, so if you're trying to watch a large area and you want to be able to zoom in really close, you can do that with these things.
Well, that's what they use in Las Vegas, isn't it?
Well, those things get into real big money. And there's some links to some of that stuff. If you're, as a business, trying to do some really big-time things, or you know, put those domes up and what have you, so you have 360-degree views and what, it's all there. And it's off-the-shelf stuff you can buy yourself and plug in and start messing with. So check it out. It's all at datadoctors.com/radio with the links and suggestions to all the things that we're talking about today. Let's go to the phones here and help Kathy, who's got a problem with a memory card that doesn't want to play nice.
Hi.
I hate when that happens.
Me too.
So you have this memory card. Is it for like a digital camera or something?
Yes.
Okay, so you are using it in the camera or are you using it in a computer?
Both, actually.
Okay, so you've taken a bunch of pictures?
Yes.
On the camera?
Actually, what I'm using it for in this case is I want to put MP3 on it to use in my Palm Pilot.
So you're using it as a 22nd century, 21st century floppy disk?
Yeah, pretty
okay,
much.
So you're just trying to copy data onto it.
Uh-huh.
And then what's happening?
After it reaches about 30% capacity, it won't let me copy anything else onto it.
It says I'm full or I'm done, or what's the error message?
It says the directory or file cannot be created.
Okay. There's a lot of potential possibilities. Now, do you have more than one card?
Yes, and it's happened with all the cards that I've tried.
And is it pretty much doing the same thing with every card?
Yeah.
Okay. So the first thing we would want to do to diagnose the problem is try these cards on a completely different machine and see if you have the same issue.
Well, while I was on hold, Ken, a friend of mine who's here just handed me this card reader, and I plugged it into the laptop that's giving me this problem, and I got the same error.
You did?
Yes.
Okay. So that helps us understand that it could be a machine issue, and it could be still be a card issue. Okay, so the only way to eliminate the cards is to try them on a completely different computer.
Okay.
That'll tell you really, really quick. I got... What could be happening is it could be a combination of the two. Could be that your card reader on your laptop is screwing up the cards, and so they'll need to be reformatted on a new machine, right? Because the defective card reader on your laptop is destroying the formatting.
Okay.
Right? So it usually won't hurt the card, but the actual ability to read and write data can be damaged. So again, I would A, try the card on a completely different computer without doing anything just to see if you can copy 100%, because if you can, you know instantly the problem is your laptop. If you can't, take that card and reformat it on the new machine and try it and see if it works. And if it still doesn't work, then you know for sure it's bad cards.
Okay.
So what you don't want to do is go and start buying a bunch of stuff without really investigating a little bit so you know which component you should be buying, you know, as far as a replacement goes.
Yes.
The other thing you can try, and I'm assuming you probably tried it, but maybe you haven't, take one of these cards. I'm assuming there's nothing on there that matters.
Correct.
Put it in the laptop that you're using and reformat it so that it's got a fresh format on there from that machine, and then try it again.
Actually, I have not tried that, so I'll do that.
So that'll be a quick way to say, okay, maybe the formatting on the cards just got messed up, and you just needed to reformat them. Same thing used to happen with floppy disks. Same things can happen with rewritable CDs. Regular CDs that you burn once and you hope for, you know, the data is going to be there forever. It can happen, and when that happens with CDs, there's nothing you can do.
Same stuff on the Mac platform as well.
Same kind of deal. So there's like 18 different things you can try before you have to go buy anything that'll help narrow it down. You understand the kind of the logic, though, and the path that you want to take?
Yes.
You want to eliminate as much as possible by doing as many things with multiple, you know, basically narrow down the variables by doing these various tests.
Okay.
Okay?
Thank you so much for your help.
Gives you something to do for the weekend, huh?
Yes.
All right, good luck with that.
All right, thanks.
And, you know, it's not a bad suggestion. Anytime you're having a problem with any kind of memory card in your camera, in your computer, whatever, try reformatting it. You can reformat it right in your camera. You can reformat it in your computer. And it just basically makes sure that everything's clean and clear and ready to go to accept.
Right. And when you're troubleshooting, sometimes it'll work in one and it doesn't work in another. Sometimes it doesn't format right in the camera, but it formats correct on the computer. So
right. So and there, you know, again, if the card reader you're using in either the camera or the computer is defective, it will create a defective format or a format that it's the only one that can read that format. So I mean, there's all those variables you got to kind of eliminate. But good news is, it's just time; it's not money. Hopefully, right? All right, let's go back to the phones and see if we can help John with what actually is a pretty common issue. John, you've got pictures, and they're really good pictures, right?
Yes.
They're really important pictures.
Yes. And the one I'm sending him to is working on genealogy book.
Even bigger, because this is for the ages. This is for the rest of eternity here. So
right.
You've scanned these images with your scanner. You got a Visionaire scanner.
I've got a Visionaire 4400 USB scanner.
So you've scanned in these images, you have them on your computer, you attached them to email, you sent them to your brother, and your brother said what?
He can't read them.
It's like, what?
He can't open the...
What the heck is this?
Attachment.
And when I asked you off the air what file format the scanned images were in, you didn't know.
No, it goes into a program called Paperport.
Right. No, that's just the interface to be able to get that stuff over. But the actual format. So think about it like money, right?
Yeah, I don't have any idea what format it's in.
Okay, so that's what you have to do is you have to now go back to your scanner software and start looking at the settings and looking at some of the options for scanning.
Uh-huh.
And you want to get it to the point, or you want to see if there's an option, and there should be, to scan this as a JPEG, JPG file.
Right.
Okay? So that's really all you need to do to be able to get this to work properly. You're probably scanning in a much larger... See, when you scan in a RAW format, it does a very high resolution. It gets a lot of dots, but it's also a very big file that's not really appropriate for email.
Okay.
But if you're trying to do a very high-quality scan, then you'd want it in one of these RAW, one of these larger, like a TIFF or something, format that it captures a lot of those dots. The problem is if you do it in that format or if it's a special format for the Visionaire, it's been a while since I've looked at the Paperport software. But if it's in a format that's special, then people that don't have that same software can't see it.
Right.
Which it sounds like is going on with your brother. JPG or JPEG files are universal. In fact, if you have a Windows machine, you scan a JPEG, you can send it to a Mac machine, it's no problem. It'll pick it up. then vice versa.
I'm sitting at the computer right now, and I did look at, try to find the property, but...
May I make a suggestion that will help everybody listening here?
Okay.
There's the completely unutilized, but very important help menu in every piece of software made.
Okay.
Usually when you click on that help menu, one of the options is to search for help or what have you. So click on the help menu, look for the search or index,
okay. And
just type in JPG and see what you come up with. And chances are you'll see 8 or 10 different discussions about how to work with the JPG file or what have you. And if there's nothing in there, then you're going, okay, well, there's a possibility that this piece of software has no way to create JPEGs. Which then means you have to, it gets a lot more complicated now because, and I really doubt that that's the case. There's got to be file formats that are common that you should be able to scan into.
Well, in a lot of those applications, you can go into the preference area, and they'll typically tell you what format you're saving at.
Right, so tools, options, save as, there's a bunch of those. But rather than trying to click around and try to figure it out on your own, go to the help menu, and everybody out there listening.
Okay.
For some reason, the help menu never gets used. In today's computer world, and I mean, they basically said, we're not going to write manuals anymore. We're going to create them online. We're going to put them in the help section, and all those people out there that are looking for help, they'll know. Click on the help menu. It's so obvious.
That's because no one was reading the manuals.
But it says help. It's kind of self-explanatory, guys. Right? That's where help. Now, I grant you, it's kind of like any other help system out there. It's not 100%. It's not perfect. It's not going to instantly tell you what you want to know, and you're going to have to learn how to search in the help. But it's essentially, instead of having to read through the whole menu, you can put in a word and start with a single word, not a big long line like, how do I save a scan in JPEG format? If you put that in there, you're probably going to get nowhere. If you just type in JPG, everything about JPEGs will come up in the help menu, and then you can start going through. That's a quicker way of scanning the help. It's like scanning the paper instruction manual. Without having to read through the whole thing, go to the table of contents, is much, much faster.
Keyword searching.
Exactly. It's there for you. Start using it, folks. It's amazing what you'll learn. Again, it's not 100%. And again, if you can't find what you want in the help section of your software, then take a look, get out to Google, and type some of those things into some of the issues that you're having into Google. And again, you'll be very, very surprised. You could type in scanning JPEGs in Paperport software. Something like that, and boom, there you go. So I'm gonna see if I can wrap up with John off the air here. But for now, we're gonna wrap up this segment with a most important bit of information. That is, what's going on with the traffic and weather out there in Phoenix. Webcams—they're not just for.
Talking to that person to play Fast World.
Yeah, talking to other people, I guess, huh? The theme of this week's show is how to use webcams more for monitoring and security in your home or business. Lots of links on our website, datadoctors.com/radio. And I think, did I put a, there's a link to the Power Over Internet camera, or Ethernet camera that D-Link has. There's a link to outdoor enclosures, so you can actually... They actually have outdoor enclosures that have, like, blowers and heaters in them that automatically kick on. I mean, they're really sophisticated little enclosures.
So they don't freeze up?
Yeah, or they don't freeze, or, you know, in this heat, I don't even know if a blower's going to help. Maybe in the shade.
Probably make it worse.
There is one of the most long-running lines of wireless cameras is from a company called X10. They're a little different than your traditional webcam because they broadcast through kind of open spectrums. And if you've heard stories in the past about people being able to drive around and pick up the signal from your nanny cam, they're primarily talking about that X10 technology because it uses a broadcasting signal that is wide open. And, you know, unless it's encrypted or what have you, it's not going to work. There's more security, or it's not going to be secure, so people can actually drive around and see what's going on in your nanny cam from out in the street. With the wireless webcams, there's plenty of security and encryption and things built in so that only people you want to access the signal can access it. So, the X10 stuff's real inexpensive, real easy to use, but it's not the same as your IP cameras that are designed for this kind of thing. But it is something that a lot of people have had, got a lot of good success with, and they tend to have the no-brainer complete kits, and, you know, do you want to record on your VCR, you want to see it on your TV, they tend to go that direction more, so we put the links up to that as well. But again, just an overview on the basics of this thing, as well as all these links to all these different cameras from A to Z, from real basic to really, really elaborate, and, I mean, $1,000 for a IP webcam because it does, you know, everything.
You got to be devoted.
Devoted?
Yeah.
I don't know how devoted.
Or have some extra coin in your pocket.
That's true.
Have a real need. By the way, we got a couple of open lines. 602-277-5827 is the number. Before we go to the phones, though, we had a couple of emails, and I let my email interface time out. A couple of emails that I thought were particularly of value and interest, and we're going to let that come back up while we take a phone call. Hey, let's talk to Ben, who's got a flash drive boot problem, it says here on the screen. Ben, what's going on with that?
Well, what happened was I had a flash drive in my USB port.
Okay.
And not realizing it, I started to boot up my computer.
Uh-huh.
And something happened. Now, every time I put the flash drive in to access it, it comes up and says, enter a disk.
Well,
by having that flash drive in when I booted it, something happened to
the
software.
Well, when you have the disk in the drive, depending upon how your hardware, your BIOS is set up, the computer could be trying to actually start up off that flash drive, which it can't, and then it'll give you that error?
Yes.
Are you saying if you pull the flash drive out, it does the same thing?
No. The computer's working fine now.
If you reboot the machine without the flash drive in it, you don't get that error, right?
Well, you're not getting the full picture.
Apparently not.
What happens, I can boot up my computer and everything is working fine. If I plug a flash drive into it and try to access the flash drive, it tells me that it wants to have me insert a disk.
Oh, it's saying it can't read that and it probably wants you to format it or do something with that, right?
I don't know.
Yeah. So don't do that anymore.
I did take these flash drives down to Data Doctor over there on one of the streets near my house here, and they said they were working fine.
Yeah, no, it's probably the actual drive itself. Is this a laptop or a desktop?
It's a desktop.
Okay, is it built? Is one of these card readers built into the machine, or is it an external one?
It's built into the machine.
Okay, you can buy an external card reader that'll plug into a USB port. They're fairly inexpensive. That'd be a quick way to overcome that, instead of replacing the one that's built into the machine. That'll tell you real quick if it's the hardware or not. It's what it sounds like. The actual drive itself's gone bad. Those little tiny pins that are in there, if they get bent or anything happens along that line, they get shorted out. That's all she wrote. And if it's built into the machine, it's the expense of replacing it versus just going out and getting one of these external drives, the external USB card readers. I mean, what's nice about those is you can plug them into any computer. And you can plug them in only when you need them. And they'll do like 18 different card formats, and it's just a much better way to go. So hopefully that helps out there. Again, a lot of card reader issues today, huh? We're talking webcams and security. Join us online, datadoctors.com/radio.
The thing I'm having is I just bought a stupid wireless mouse.
But can I do that with Wi-Fi?
Now my screensaver doesn't work.
And that's the solution I'm looking for.
Yep, that would be it.
Something that they call drive-by download.
Okay, stop there.
Try to boot into something called safe mode. Take my advice and go get this free program that is out of this world.
Eliminate those and see if the problem still persists.
Oh, that's a great idea. Okay, I didn't think about that.
Does your computer bite?
There's nothing that comes in the computer that's of any value.
Has your hard drive gone floppy?
The head whack is the thing that makes you kind of go,
dope! It's time to call the Computer Corner.
We're not your daddy's computer radio show.
Is this thing on?
On News Talk 92.3, KTAR.
And welcome to hour number two of the Computer Corner. You didn't know I was bilingual, huh?
Wow.
We're talking about webcams and how they can be used for something more than just making goofy faces at your in-laws or...
Whatever. Although that is pretty fun.
That is fun. You can use them to record your, you know, little video greetings or... Video blogging. Vlogging, now they call it, I guess.
Vlogging. Wow.
But you can use them to monitor what's going on in your home, your backyard, your side yard, your business, your vacation home, whatever. All you need is one of these IP-based webcam, so it's a little different than your regular webcam. By the way, open phone lines, 602-277-5827. Rare occurrence, take advantage, 602-277-5827. While we're having this discussion, we go to the Geek Speak. All of that information we're talking about with all these different webcams is available at datadoctors.com/radio, including one of the more significant components of this show that we try to bring to the table every week, and that is the Geek Speak of the Week. Every week we try to bring you a new word, a new term, a new something in the vernacular that you probably may not know about, or maybe you heard the term and you go, I don't know what that means. So right now, if you happen to be cruising around on Craigslist looking for an older generation iPhone, you're probably going to see a lot of people advertising iPhones with this word. What is the Geek Speak of the Week this week, Taylor?
Jailbroken.
Jailbreaking?
Jailbreaking, jailbroken.
Yeah. Well, the past tense, either one. The act of jailbreaking, right, is the actual Geek Speak of the Week.
Which, purchase a broken iPhone.
Yes.
Broken.
Well, what does jailbreaking mean? What does it mean to jailbreak something?
When you jailbreak it, you basically take away Apple's original, you know, security of applications and that kind of thing. But also for iPhones, it frees it for networks.
So you're basically saying, I know Apple wants me to use it only this way. They only want me to use programs that they sell me on here.
Right.
But there's a whole bunch of people out there that said, hey, if you can jailbreak your iPod Touch or your iPhone, you can load these other programs on. You don't have to pay Apple anything. Right?
Right. And some of, like, most of them, I can't remember what you call them, begware? Is that what you call them?
Well, yeah, anybody that writes software and says, here, have it for free, but if you feel like making a donation, go ahead and donate.
The majority of the applications for, you know, jailbroken stuff.
Well, there's shareware, there's trialware, and I like begware. Please send me money! So now, we know this is going on, Lewis.
Uh-huh.
You're an authorized Apple dealer.
Correct.
You deal with this stuff. You obviously want to stay on the right side of Apple's ledger here. What does this mean when somebody does this to their phone or their iPod Touch? What does it actually do, and what are the risks?
Well, the risks are that it could be a little unstable at times. So some of these applications may not run as advertised.
Exactly.
Or may cause all kinds of issues. Now, what happens if you take your machine, your iPhone or your iPod Touch in for service, and it's clearly been jailbroken?
I'm pretty sure they're not going to look at that, but what you're going to need to do is reformat it and then bring it in.
So yeah. be careful.
Because it can void the warranty, because, yeah.
You absolutely. Yeah. So when people see, because one of the things that I'm watching for is, will the iPhone 2.0, 3G, whatever you want to call it, will that cause a number of people with the old iPhones to say, okay, well, now I'm going to sell this?
So it's going to bring up the value?
Well, or I'm hoping what will happen is that the market will get flooded with old iPhones, right? Which obviously ain't going to happen since they can't deliver new iPhones. But at some point, they may be so passe that people will have plenty of these old iPhones that people are going, yes, I want the new one. I really don't care.
It's the new Razr.
Exactly. Well, but here's the cool part about the old iPhones. Forget about the phone part. If you can buy it on the cheap, it's cheaper than buying a new iTouch.
Yeah, the touches are a bit pricey.
Yeah, so maybe it's a cheaper way to buy an iTouch. You just don't ever activate the phone.
With a camera, too.
And with a camera. So it might actually be, you know, those of you looking for an iTouch.
But we don't have a webcam built in.
No, unfortunately not in this case. But anyway, you will see that. And if you're a big Apple iPhone, used iPhone buyer, you're looking for that. I just happened to notice that was on just about every single entry in Craigslist. People that had an older generation iPhone, some of them even the new ones. I've got a new one that's already jailbroken.
It definitely raises the attractiveness of the iPhone because there is a lot of cool things that can come with it.
It does now that people understand what that means.
Right.
Hence the Geek Speak of the Week. By the way, 602-277-5827 is the number. However, all the lines are full, so don't bother calling in. You can email us by going to datadoctors.com/radio and clicking on the link in the feedback section that says ask a question. Like Paul asks, what do you think of the Microsoft Office-like program from openoffice.org? I just bought a new computer and did not want to pay the $$ sign for activation of Office. So he got there's a classic thing that happens. People will go, oh, you got a brand new computer, it's got Microsoft Office on it, and they get it home, they go, wait a minute, this thing's only good for 30 days or 90 days.
Yeah, thanks for the demo.
It's a trial version. How much you want? You want how much to get this thing active? $200-$300 to activate the thing to be able to use everything. It's like, nah. So,
read the fine print.
Well, I mean, I understand what you're buying, but, you know, he's asking here, sometimes there are compatible format problems, particularly with Excel, with OpenOffice. However, the pre-installed Microsoft works okay for those few instances, and the price is right. So he's asking, does it make sense for me to go get OpenOffice and use it for most of the stuff, and then when I have this issue of file formats, just use the lesser Microsoft Works that's already on there? Paul, absolutely, there's no reason not to. The only reason you wouldn't want to use OpenOffice is if you have this issue that you're exchanging files with a lot of other people, and you're having a constant problem where you can't read their files. They should be able to read yours fine, but you can't read what they're sending, and that's always going to be an issue. So, like, when the new version of Office came out, the 2007, they had these new file formats. So when it first came out, people that had OpenOffice couldn't read those file formats. Well, guess what? People that had the old version of Office couldn't read those file formats either. Both groups had to wait for somebody to come up with a file conversion utility or the ability to read it. And the cool thing about OpenOffice is it's part of the open architecture. It's basically the kind of software that a lot of people are contributing their talents to build and develop and what have you. So it's kind of a cool community application. So since it's free, and since there's really no way to know whether it's going to cause a problem for you until you use it, Paul, by all means, give it a shot. Just make sure you got enough drive space.
Yeah, and it's the same on the Mac platform with the Office 2008. Same types of issues. Works great with Office 2007 on the Windows side, but then when you go to the older versions of
the file formats,
the file formats, then you have issues sometimes.
Yeah, it's not fun. So it is what it is, but it doesn't really matter which program you're using. The file format issue always comes up. So, you know, it's just part of life in the technology age. Let's go back to the phones here and talk to Scott about webcams. Scott, what's on your mind?
Hey, I've got a 2 megapixel HP webcam, and I got it just about a month ago.
Okay.
And I got to tell you, it seems like it needs more candle power than the sun will emit to get a resolution without having to go in there and doctor the brightness and just fool with the color and make it look ugly.
So you're talking about the actual image itself is kind of bad?
Well, the image is just, you know, you have to doctor with it, so it comes, you can't get true color
some of the others.
Like you could if you had the power of the sun.
Oh, I see. Okay, hang on, I'm going to give you some tips here about how to make webcams work more gooder. But for now, we want to teach you how to drive more gooder by making sure you don't get into the traffic jams that are out there, and Carla Cruz is going to tell us how to avoid them. Have you hugged your webcam today? Swing batter. How about them Diamond Ducks?
You got baseball on the mind.
Yeah, I do. We're talking about webcams and how they can do a whole lot more than just provide you with a way to communicate with others real time through chat or blogging or whatever you're doing with it, but more from the security and monitoring standpoint. Now, before we went to break, we were talking to Scott, who's feeling the love of the webcam, is trying to communicate with other people through this webcam, and they're saying, what kind of cave are you broadcasting from? Is that a reasonable
you hit it right on the
description.
That's perfect.
People on the other end, they're saying, hey, what the heck is good? It's so dark.
He's sending smoke signals.
So, a couple things.
Not even smoke signals. I mean, it looks like we're back in the dark ages and there's no electricity and no light other than one little candle.
Well, lighting for any camera, whether it's a digital camera, webcam, lighting is critical. The webcam lenses are not that sophisticated, so one of the things they're going to do is they're going to look at the ambient light. So if you had like a window behind you or anything at all that's going to bring some light into the background, that's actually going to cause the iris to shut down. In other words, basically cause that dark picture that you're talking about. Some cameras have an adjustment that say, I have bright backlighting, so make the adjustment. And there's a software setting that you tell the camera's software, you know, I have a backlighting issue. The way you can tell real quick if it's a backlighting issue is get like a blanket, have somebody or somebody that's standing behind you or something, take a dark blanket or something, put it right behind you so that it's just you and the webcam and this blanket. So that you know that way, you know whatever's in the background is no longer contributing to the what's going on in the camera's vision.
Yes.
And if suddenly now you see your skin tones come up and it gets lighter and what have you, you got a backlighting issue.
Gotcha.
Okay. The easiest thing to do, I mean, I do my CNN segments every Saturday morning with a webcam, and I had to play with it as well because I have a window behind me that, you know, I've got the shutters closed, but it's still leaking through ambient lighting, and I had to put a pretty good fluorescent bulb in a gooseneck kind of
lamp.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Taylor is here for a reason. Help me remember what the word lamp is.
Yeah.
And actually point that thing at my face so that I get enough lighting so that it comes through for the broadcast. So,
yes. So
doing that type of thing is not uncommon if you, again, it really depends on the sophistication of the camera and the lens, the sophistication of the software that came with it, and then, of course, all that ambient lighting that's going to contribute.
There are also some companies out there that make actual attachments that you can, little lights that you can attach to your webcam, and then it gets the power through the USB.
Yeah, so that gives you, it tends not to be bright enough, though, if you're having a real lighting issue.
Right.
But try those things out. But the most likely cause is you've got ambient light behind you that you weren't aware of, that the camera sees, and as soon as the camera sees it, says, oh, I better shut down my eye, or better close it up a little bit to keep that light out.
Gotcha.
Make sense?
Gotcha. All right, I'll give it a shot. Thanks.
Okay, take care now, and good luck. And lighting is critical. It can make a huge difference on what it looks like for the people on the other end especially. Actually have John on the phone. He said that, this what we're talking about today might be exactly what they're talking about doing it at your son's restaurant. Is that right?
I think it might be. I'm tuning in late, but I'm thinking of upgrading his security system from a hardwired system to a wireless system that he can monitor both while he's there and after hours while he's at home.
Well, wired or wireless, he'll be able to do that accessing from home. Okay, so in a restaurant, if you want to make sure it's always working, you actually want to look at all the wired options first, because wired is always better than wireless. Okay, the ability to actually see it from home is a secondary issue.
Really?
Yeah, because the problem with wireless is like your cell phones, like anything that's wireless.
Right.
There's some things that can happen that will cause it not to work anymore. And when you have a wired system, then that the only reason that it won't work is if somebody cuts the wire.
Right.
So whereas wireless, it's an open broadcast spectrum. So microwave ovens can cause issues with wireless, cordless phones, other networks. So if you happen to be in an area where a lot of people have wireless networks, it can cause your camera not to know which one it's supposed to be reporting to. So I wouldn't necessarily get caught up on the wireless side.
Okay, you're saying it wouldn't necessarily have to go wireless. He could use the system as he has it right now.
Well, it depends on what he has and whether it's capable of actually broadcasting out to the Internet. And that, so that's the first thing I would suggest is get with whoever sold you the equipment that you have now. Make sure
I think we picked it up at Costco.
Okay, so there may not be. So you can go online and try to figure that out. The other thing, then, go visit our website. We have a lot of links to, and I would look specifically in your case, look at a lot of the D-Link options that are out there, because they've got a lot of great stuff for more of a professional
thing. I'm looking at that right now. I do have a D-Link system in my house for my own.
All right, John, I'm going to put you on hold there for a sec because we're running out of time. I'll take you off the air and have a little more of a discussion there, but that's great. Exactly what this is all about. Check that out on our website, datadoctors.com/radio, and then you'll see all the links in the resource section where you can go right to the various webcams. It's Ken and Lewis and Taylor here talking webcams. Stay tuned. We have, for your viewing pleasure, posted at datadoctors.com/radio all of today's resources for incorporating special webcams that are known as IP cameras or IP webcams, or you'll see different designations. But the bottom line is it's a webcam that can actually talk to the Internet without a PC, which gives you a lot of options for monitoring anything you want through these little webcams. And they're pretty cool and neat, and you can read all about that and all the different companies that are providing different products for you residential, or as John called in, for his son's restaurant. There's a million different things to go. If you're in a commercial environment and you want to make sure those cameras always work, always look at the wired option first. Wired is always better than wireless. Would you agree?
I'd always go wired if I can.
Even in the Mac world, right?
Sure.
Where the wireless were, I mean, they got wireless down.
Right? Well, yeah, wireless. I mean,
Mac's got wireless down, but it you're talking about wireless technology that can fail. And
well, and I probably should use wired technology at my house, but I'm lazy.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I mean, in a home, it's a little more difficult because you got to go and, you know, run the wires and do all that stuff.
Well, who wants to crawl through the attic at 115 degrees?
Exactly.
Businesses typically have a much easier way, or they already have infrastructure in place for computers. It's the same connection you use to plug in a computer as what you use to plug into these IP-based webcams. So, you know, keep that in mind if you're a business. Don't think that wireless is better because it's easier. It's not as reliable.
Well, and I think you want to get a scalable solution, something that you can grow with.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's go back to the phones and talk to Eric, who has something that we had a little discussion off the air, but you have a situation that's pretty common, and I think knowing what to do when this happens is the important part of the discussion. So tell the people what's going on in your world, Eric.
Oh, not much. I had a hard drive. It developed a read error, and all of a sudden, it started ticking.
And of course,
I knew you would laugh at that one.
And of course, the ticking, when that happened, the drive was no longer accessible, right?
Correct. Okay. The system doesn't even find it anymore.
Right.
And it wasn't his watch.
Yeah, it wasn't your watch. It wasn't a time bomb. It wasn't one of those spy versus spy, you know. Yeah, what the ticking is the actual read-write heads are on this this almost like a tone arm, like an old turntable. And that ticking is that thing trying to find the beginning of the hard drive where it can start reading data. And it's just whipping back and forth in your hard drive because it's failing. The problem with that is, I mean, the first of all, that is a fairly, I mean, it's a very high-level repair to get that drive to work again. And the only reason you'd go through that is if you had lost data. You'd never want to try to repair something like that and continue to use it as a regular drive. So there's no reason to do that. The thing that people need to understand, that the minute you hear that ticking, we had this on our Signs of an Imminent Failure show some time back.
Turn it off.
Absolutely. Turn that thing off immediately, because the more times it clicks and the more often you start that machine up and try to access it, there's a very high likelihood that you know you're destroying the data on the drive or making it more expensive or almost impossible to get to the data if you care. Luckily for you, there's nothing on there you care about.
Nothing at all.
Right. So in your case, you unplug it, go buy a new drive, start over and go about your business.
Take it out back and hit it with a hammer.
No.
Well, what do I do with the old drive?
Well,
toss it away, or is there a recycle program somewhere?
Yeah, we don't ever want people to take any kind of electronic device and any kind of electronic component and throw it away, because that is toxic waste. So thanks for bringing that up, Eric. That's a great part of this thing. If you have that old stuff, there are recycling programs, there are recyclers. We Data Doctors participates with multiple entities, the Arizona Technology Council, Westech Recyclers, to look at things that are coming in and say, okay, this needs to be recycled, this can be donated. And we get that usable stuff to the charities, the donation companies. And then the stuff that we want to make sure doesn't get into the landfills, we get through the recycler. So any of the Data Doctors locations, anybody can drop off anywhere in the country their old electronics, in your case.
Well, and those recyclers will part them out and use those pieces that are...
They'll make sure that the stuff gets separated out. So like the circuit board gets separated out and the metal gets separated out, and then they go to the different places that can deal with that stuff and melt that stuff down and reuse it or dispose of it properly. So, anywhere in the city you see a Data Doctors location, you can drop that thing off there, Eric.
I will do that, guys.
All right. Hey, thanks for calling in, and thanks for sharing your pain. Fortunately, it was a very minor pain, because if it wasn't, you'd be in for a very expensive data recovery bill, because that's unfortunately one of the most expensive things, scenarios when it comes to data recovery. We've been performing data recovery at the laboratory level for, you know, 15, 16 years. The problem with that ticking hard drive scenario is, in order for that drive to function properly again, we literally have to find an exact match. And when I say exact match, I don't mean it's a Western Digital 80 gig. It's a Western Digital 80 gig that has this production run, this particular electronic firmware. I mean, it's got to be
everything. Yeah.
It's got to be from the same run, or it's like two different drives altogether.
And those are fun to find these days, too.
We have people in our organization, their full-time job is just to track down these older drives, just so that when somebody brings a data recovery of this nature, you know, it's critical. I mean, people have 5, 10, 15 years worth of their home, you know, and their photos and their music and whatever else, and there's no backup. Businesses have their entire organization. I mean, they're completely down. So we have to do whatever we have to do to get that stuff back. And so, you know, that's the more you do to a drive that's failing, the more likely it's going to either cause additional expense or additional damage that could cause that data not to be accessible. So the big lesson here, folks, you hear that ticking sound, immediately turn your computer off. Get with somebody who can help you unplug that thing from your machine so that there's no way anybody accidentally turns it back on, and then assess whether it makes sense for you to spend the money for data recovery or not before you move on. Or it could be lights out for that. See, we can go back to the phones. I'm sorry.
And for those people that aren't backed up,
Yeah. Well, but we've been preaching that for 20 years, and, you know, human nature. It's not going to happen to me. I'll do it tomorrow. Ryan, you back up every day, don't you?
Oh, once a week.
Well, that's better than 99.99% of the people that have ever called.
It's automatic on Sunday nights.
Congratulations to you, sir.
Thank you. Your
question is on wireless keyboard and mice combos?
Yeah, I actually have two questions. First one is I've got a wireless keyboard and mouse that I plugged into my HP desktop.
Okay.
And screensaver doesn't work. I did a little Googling, and it looks like I have to change something in the registry.
Okay.
I don't know if registry is something safe to dabble with if you're an amateur.
No. Now, if you go to a particular website that gives you the step-by-step directions, and you look at them and you feel comfortable doing that, that's up to you. I will warn you that if you're going to mess with the registry, the first thing you want to do is make a backup of the registry, which you can actually do in the registry editor, you know, file backup. You create a backup of the registry before you do anything. So, I mean, if it's a simple little change to one value in one key, it's probably pretty benign. But if it's one of these things where you're dealing with multiple keys and, you know, it's this big, long list of things you have to do and you have to get every single one right in the right order, I'm not sure I'd recommend you do that if you're not familiar with and comfortable with that.
Okay. Yeah,
it's like, cut the green wire. No, the yellow wire. The blue one. Which one?
Okay. Well, it seemed pretty basic, but, you know, again, I just wanted to...
Yeah, if it's in the tech support section of the manufacturer's website, generally speaking, unless they give you a big warning, advanced users only, that kind of thing, usually it's not something that terribly difficult or dangerous.
Yeah, Microsoft had the steps. It was a Microsoft mouse and keyboard.
Yeah, so, you know, if they're posting it on their website...
Their software, their mouse, their keyboard.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, you have to look at it and decide for yourself, am I comfortable following through? Is this just too crazy for me?
Okay. My second question is Mac related. I've got a Mac, an eMac from about 5 years ago. Keyboard went out. I plugged in just another keyboard into one of the USB ports. When the screensaver kicks in, sometimes when it comes out of that, when it wakes back up, it doesn't recognize the keyboard. If I switch it to a different USB port, you know, I'm all good.
Sounds like it's probably not getting enough power.
And the keyboard isn't?
Yeah, for some reason. Those older eMacs didn't come with USB 2. They had an older version of the USB software. So it may be the keyboard and the hardware on the eMac that's causing those issues.
They don't like each other?
Yeah, they're not talking.
Is there an alternative interface?
Which keyboard did you purchase?
Actually, I was just played musical keyboards with some keyboards I had around. I think it's a ViewSonic.
I would just try another keyboard, and if that keyboard does work without any issues, then it's the keyboard that's causing the problem.
But if there's not an alternative to USB on that particular, on the eMac?
No, unfortunately, everything's integrated. It's all in one.
Yeah. Well, at least with Windows machines, you've got an alternative. I just had to, man. You know, any place where we can pick our spots, right?
Oh, I knew it was coming.
Like, hey, we've got a keyboard port.
Seventh
you don't.
Grade all over again.
It is. Neener, neener, neener.
Except that my PC keyboard port is empty because it's all USB now, it seems.
Yeah, but when you run into a problem, you
have
that
option.
That's right. You jump right back in there, babe.
Did you just call him babe?
Yeah, I did.
Wow.
Ryan, babe.
Wow.
Hey, thanks for calling, babe.
Hey, thank you for your help.
All right.
Not creepy at all.
Hey, come on.
You don't even call me babe. I mean, that's a little weird.
I can call you babe.
Yeah, but that'd be weird.
You got anything else to add to the show, babe?
Not really, just making fun of you. Yeah. No.
The creepy computer corner.
Exactly.
The creepy corner. Excellent. Well, again, if you have, if you're just joining us, if you visit us online at datadoctors.com/radio, you'll see today's offerings and our theme, which is how to use webcams for security, for monitoring, for nanny cams, for whatever. There's a bunch of different options out there for you to use these kind of second tier webcams, not the regular webcams that you plug in where you have to have a computer, but these are webcams that actually are standalone. They actually have built into them a web server, which means they can serve web pages, which means you literally can access these cameras directly from the internet through your home network. Sounds a little complicated. It's really not. You can do this wired. You can do it wireless. All the different cameras from all the major manufacturers, we've got links to a lot of them right there on the page, as well as some just general overview discussion about if you're going to go to a wireless, don't forget you got to put it near a electrical outlet because it's got to have that electricity to be able to power up the camera. But once it's powered up, it transmits its signal through the wireless network, and bada bang, bada boom, you're off and running.
So when you're driving down the 101, and one of those cameras gets you, is that an IP camera?
No, those are
wired in the ground.
I'm not even going to say what kind of camera those are. Well, let's talk to Carla Cruz about traffic and where. Well, maybe someday we can add the. The traffic cameras to the report, huh? Oh, Pete, just for me.
Yeah.
Go see the D-backs lay waste to the Dodgers a couple hours here.
The Dodgers?
He's getting me ready.
Let's hope.
Dan Heron's going to mow him down. But in the meantime, we are talking about webcams and how they can be used for security cameras, monitoring. This whole pan, tilt, zoom thing, the PTZ option that you see, that is pretty cool. That they, I mean, it used to be that you had to buy a separate unit that you put a regular webcam on to be able to do all this. There are a whole bunch of cameras that are in the probably $250 to $300 range that have the motorized controls that you can remotely control. And so literally you could have one camera to cover this huge area because you could just manually tell it, okay, I want you to look over there. I want to go over here. There are wide-angle lenses. There are lenses that are designed specifically for low lighting like night. It's not night vision, but low lighting like you have at night. You make the adjustments. Very high-resolution optical zoom. The resolution itself, I've seen them as high as almost 800 pixels.
They do HD?
I don't know of any HD that are going to make it through an internet connection because I think that's way too many dots.
Yeah.
So I don't think that's, we're not there yet. When the internet 4.0 version of our connection world, you know, when we have these insane, you know, fiber optic level connections out there that everybody's, you know, rushing to try to come up with.
Once we get through that series of pipes.
Yeah. Well, the internet's a series of tubes, actually.
Tubes, that's
yeah.
what it is.
Yeah. It's not a dump truck. If you don't know what we're talking about, we're making fun of Senator Ted Stevens and his ranting on about what the internet is and isn't. And unfortunately,
did not sound very educated.
Great example of a legislator, somebody that legislates technology that he has absolutely no clue about. A really strange thing that we, and one of the items in the newsletter today is one of the columnists out there going, McCain can't even do his own emails. He can't get on the internet by himself.
That's what assistants are for.
Well, his question is, can somebody truly lead the most powerful nation in the world
and not
in the information age and not have the first clue about the information age?
Yeah, that's a little tough.
So, I mean, clearly, it's not about, you know, who can email better. Okay, that's the president. But technology and how technology is used, and let's face it, the internet completely changes the game when it comes to business. You're no longer dealing with the 48 states, the 50 states. You're dealing with who knows what out there. So you have to understand what the limitations are. I mean, look at how many times they've tried to figure out how to legislate, you know, whether we're going to charge tax for e-commerce. I mean, all of those issues,
yeah.
What's covered under the old telephone tapping, you know, laws and what's not? Well, that's video, that's not audio. I mean, technology has really twisted and turned a lot of the laws, and navigating that's going to be very important as we move forward. And not creating, I mean, we have a ridiculous thing going on in our industry. It's a great example of how, You know, the political system really doesn't look at the reality of what they're doing when it comes to legislation. There's a law in the books in Dallas or in Texas that we're working with a group to help kind of fight. But apparently the lobby for private investigators was so powerful that they were able to get a law on the books in Texas that says if somebody that's working on a computer does something that implicates a third party, that basically is that's investigative work. Therefore, they're breaking the law in the book says you're not allowed to do that unless you have a private investigator's license. Now, think about that. You're in the service business.
So somebody, as a computer technician, I'd be required to have a license.
Well, if you're going to do something on the computer, so somebody says, I want you to pull all this information off. I want to see what my husband's doing or my wife's doing or whatever.
What about just a simple data backup?
Well, that's okay because there's not a third party involved.
Okay.
Okay, but it's enough of, if it's enough of a gray area, think about all the exposure. Well, now, here's a great example of people, you know, creating legislation without thinking the stuff through from a technological standpoint.
Sure.
So,
well,
you know,
and if you don't know.
Well, you know, somebody snuck it in at the last minute, some pork barrel deal, and here you go. So now you have to fight through it, and, you know, it is what it is. So anyway, it'll be interesting to see what's going on there, but that all started with the making fun of Ted Stevens. Go to the Daily Show's website and look up net neutrality if you want to see what I'm talking about. Hilarious skits from the folks at the Daily Show on that whole net neutrality thing that happened last year. Well, Lewis, thanks for coming in. LewisMacMediaInc.com,
well,
right?
Yeah.
Taylor, thanks for coming in and making fun of me and talking about jailbreaking.
Quite welcome.
That's good. Mario, thanks for screening. Pete, thanks for making it all come together. And thank you for joining us. And if you want more information, datadoctors.com/radio, and you can see all the stuff we talked about today.